friends, this is Event Demystified. I am still tempted sometimes to say Event AV and Lighting Demystified, but I have to remind myself that we changed the name. And the funny thing is, one of the main people that have really encouraged me to do that is going to be our featured guest today. And he has been around the event industry for a while. I mean, when I say a while, I mean a while, and he's going to share a wealth of information, tips on how to engage an online audience in this new world, wild world of virtual and hybrid events. So buckle up and let's dive in. Before we introduce him, I want to just speak a little bit about his professional background. He started his career in the travel industry when he founded Moguls Mountain Travel, a leading ski tour operator in the 80s, in the 90s, and early 2000s, which has been combining his passion for skiing and the mountains with his entrepreneurial spirit. After selling Moguls, Bruce joined Focusrite as head of sales marketing. It was there that he met his current business partners, Douglas, and started collaborating together on a variety of projects. They have started in 2017 what they now call Arrival, which is a leading event and research company. It has been called one of the best part of travel, the only B2B conference in the world, especially for the creators and sellers of tours, activities, attractions, and experiences. In 2019, this was a $254 billion industry. Arrival quickly became a global market leader, producing events in the US, Europe, and APAC in 2019. And starting in March 2020, as we have all experienced, they started beginning the conversation of what will it look like to take their in-person events to digital. And so they have produced three virtual events, with their biggest being a five-day event spread out over 2 weeks in late October, early November, where they had almost 2,000 registrants from 60 different countries, 80% participation rate, and very high engagement rates. By all accounts, this event was extremely successful. And this is what I want to talk to Bruce about, because there's so many lessons that we can all learn, how we can make our events profitable. Their event was profitable in the range of six figures. Studying March, like we all have, Bruce has been really focusing on studying and figuring out the world of virtual and hybrid events. And that is something that we're going to talk about, because we connected on that. And we both agree that the opportunity is huge and the future of events is both virtual and hybrid. Bruce, welcome to Events Demystified.
Anka, it's great to be here. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to this discussion.
Well, let's start with the first question before we get in the nitty-gritty of events and virtual and hybrid events. I'm going to ask you something that I ask all my guests, and that has to do with, how did you navigate through COVID last year, having, you know, all those events that you worked on? How did you do this transition into virtual? And really, how did COVID affect your personal and professional life?
Well, loaded question. So we were in Berlin on February 28th, planning to start our Arrival Berlin event on March 1st. And that's when we had to cancel our Berlin event. So here we are in Berlin. People were literally already there for the event. They were flying in. We had one guy from Australia who said, should I come or not? I'm like, don't know. And he hopped on a plane. And by the time he landed, we had canceled the event. So we started March 1, canceling our Berlin event. Then, of course, we had to cancel our Dubai event, our Bangkok event, our Phoenix event. As soon as we saw what was happening, we immediately were demoing event platforms, because we knew you had to have the right tech as well as all the other parts to make an event successful. So literally, I remember my partner in Berlin getting demos from a few of the major event platforms. Simultaneously, we realized that we need to be there for our community. Arrival represents, as you said, this community of attractions and tours and activities and experiences. And they really look to us for content and for community. So we wanted to be there for them right away. So we came up with a webinar series, you know, and that's really what most people did right away. And we literally had over 35 webinars with well over 10,000 attendees. They were all free, one exception. And we just put all the content out early and highly produced content. And so that was our first, you know, foray into digital, if you will. Obviously, very quickly, everyone was doing webinars. There was so much free content out there. Yes, our presenters were better, our production was better, but you know, there were so many options, and Zoom fatigue was already starting to set in by April, May. So we knew we had to change, and we were already planning to change to the next step, which of course is a virtual event. So how do I define a virtual event compared to a webinar? Well, really, it's the engagement. It's not a one-way push, but it's truly the engagement that you can get from having a full event platform, setting it up properly. And, you know, we had lots of ways that we did that. We started with a beta event in June, free for everyone, just to kind of get an idea of what did and didn't work. Then we had another event in July that was in the Asia Pacific time zone, because we do have quite an audience there. And then the end of October, early November was our first major event from what we learned at the betas, where it was 5 days over a 2 week period. And, you know, you talked about it, how we had almost 2000 registrations and super high engagement, super high interest. And there's a lot of reasons that that all happened.
Yeah, I remember joining parts of that. It was beautiful, the fact that he had all these multiple time zones and you could just pick and choose whatever worked for you. So that was fantastic. Now, you mentioned engagement, because I guess one of the biggest questions that stemmed out of, you know, virtual events is how do you keep this audience engaged now in this virtual format? And I think that's something that I could tell that has been on your mind, because you spend quite a bit of time focusing on. I would love to get your take on that.
Sure. So let's take a step back for a second. I want to make sure everyone out there knows, you know, there's so many definitions of an event. There's so many different kinds of event. What we look at, what we care about, because this is what our event is, it's a B2B boutique event. You know, we call it boutique. It's a niche, this industry we're in. It's a big niche. It's $254 billion, or at least it was pre-COVID. So it's a very big niche. No one else is focused on it like we are. But that said, it still is a community that is all built around common interest. Not every event is like that, right? There's so many different kinds of events. So I want to make it clear that when I'm talking about what we've done, that's really the core, is it's a community that cares about what we're doing. And you've heard my phrase of, well, if content is king, engagement is queen. And
I love that.
And it really is. And so the number one thing that I think is so important is you got to have a community that cares. You know, if you're trying to push a virtual event out there and the community doesn't really care, they're not going to show up. Or when they do show up, they're going to be doing their email. They're going to be multitasking. They're not going to be as engaged. So how do you make them care? Every community, every event producer has to figure that out. I can't help you decide how to make your community care about your event, but I can tell you that that's step one. We know that our people cared, and they cared enough that they paid. They cared enough that they paid attention. We know how long they were on our site. So that gave us that first step of engagement. I mentioned paid. I want to talk about that for a second, because we did go unpaid first, and then our last event was paid. You got to have skin in the game. So there's a lot of question out there. Should we charge? Should we not charge? What should we charge? If you don't charge, then those people don't have their skin in the game, which means they're not going to necessarily show up at the same rate that they would if they pay. You know, we've all done it. We've all registered for events and webinars, haven't had to pay. And maybe we show up, maybe we don't. Maybe we say, oh, I'll just catch it on demand. How many times, Anka, have you done that and then never watched it on demand?
Oh, right? I can think of several times for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't really happen.
Things become priorities based on, you know, what's happening. And like you said, maybe 90%, I would say I would certainly show up for something that I paid something for. May that be virtual or in person.
Right. Well, in person is a whole nother thing.
Like, right. But I mean, something that's local. You have like a networking event that, you know, you just paid a ticket to attend. You know, maybe it was your drink ticket, whatever. I don't know. You know, you still put effort because, I mean, just pay for that thing. I want to show up.
So we will be charging now. The first couple, again, they were beta, we didn't. So what we did, we have different categories of attendees we do for our live events and now, of course, virtual, and we price accordingly. So we have three different price points depending on the company size, the company type. So our main attendees are what we call operators. They're the companies that actually operate these tours and activities and attractions. And we have small ones and big ones, and they pay a different fee to attend our live events or to attend our virtual events. Then we have all others. All others are the service providers. They should pay more, and they do pay more. So one thing we did to make this a profitable event and to get people to pay what they thought was a fair amount was tier our pricing. I think that's a really important thing. We also, because we're in the travel business, and the travel business is pretty much closed up right now, and it has been all summer. So we have so many of our community who are basically out of business. And we did offer a free ticket. The first time it was free for everybody. So we got a lot of people that didn't show up and that were kind of there to spam, and it just didn't work out real well. But for this last event, we asked people to fill out an application for a free ticket. And that was enough of a hurdle that if people took the time to fill out an application to tell us why they should have a free ticket, we accepted 99% of them. And then when we accept them, they thanked us. Oh, thank you so much for the free ticket. They showed up, they were engaged. So it was still a way to offer a free ticket, but to put enough of a hurdle there that I think it makes a difference. And I really think it's better. A lot of people are doing this thing, pay what you want. I've been asked to pay what I want, and I usually pay zero. That's just me. When one option right in the booking engine is zero, it's too easy.
The human nature, right?
Right? And it's different than in our booking engine. It's not a zero. You have to kind of go and click down, but I think you get the point. So that's one way to get engagement, is to have people who are engaged in what you're doing and who have skin in the game because they paid to be there. The next couple things really are what we've done, and I think depends on the event itself. One is everyone has chat. You're streaming and you have chat. And so much of the chat is, hi, I'm from Boulder, Colorado, or hi, I'm from Boise, Idaho. And, you know, that's great, but I don't really care that much. Yeah. Versus we all have chat as the speaker's going. If it's a pre-recorded session, we ask the speaker to be in the chat. So really creating that there. If it's not a pre-recorded session, if it's live, we create a dynamic chat just by feeding in some of our own comments and getting the community to talk about what really matters related to the session. The chat of our events is super dynamic. People love it. A lot of these people know each other, a lot don't know each other, but that atmosphere is created just within chat for each live session. One other step, and this is basically our platform, and it was an important part when we chose a platform. I want to know who Anka is, right? Like if Anka makes a really interesting comment in chat, I might say, huh, who is she? And I can click on your name and I can see your profile. That to me gets a lot more engagement, because now I could say, huh, she's someone I want to meet with. And I could just send you a meeting request or a connection request or whatever. There's a few different ways that in our platform, we can network with each other right there while the session's going on. And oh, by the way, I can still see the session. A lot of platforms take you off that session when you get into the networking. And that, to me, kills engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the experiences that I've had on this platform is, so most platforms, they do rely on the attendee to provide the information that fills up their profile. This event that I was registering for on the platform, and the platform that we're mentioning here is Swapcard. There's no secret, really. I think it's really good to mention different platforms with different functions and functionalities. So one thing that I've noticed is the fact that I had to go through like 3 or 4 different pages if I registered for an event to really fill the information. Otherwise, I couldn't be registering. Yes, it takes extra level of commitment to this event that now I'm going to join for me to put all this information that basically populates my profile so that, like you said, when it's time for someone to press on my photo, there is something to see, because I've attended events, virtual events in the past and conferences where, sure, I can see somebody say something interested and there's no picture, there's no information besides the first name, and there's nothing there. So I'm like, well, that was interesting, but it doesn't get me anywhere right now. You know,
I don't think we can stress this one enough. Really is. So I'm going to repeat and extrapolate on what you just said, Anka, because I think it's so important. And I'm going to start with a different example. There's an event called World Travel Market. I'm all about travel, and it's World Travel Market in London. And when you register, it's in a convention. So a lot of it is all about networking. Content is really secondary. So when you register, there is, like you said, 2-3 pages of things that you need to talk about your company so that when someone else is looking at your profile, they know if they want to spend the time to meet with you or not. So it's been done for years. This is nothing new, but virtual events, especially the ones that are content focused, seem to have forgotten this. Plus, the tech doesn't always work that way. Swapcard, our platform, actually currently doesn't have a registration system. They just did acquire one within the last couple of weeks.
Avilo, it's called?
Yeah, Avilo. We've used Avenium for our registration pre-COVID, and we still are using it because they have an API connecting to Swapcard. And we're asking lots of questions at registration. You know, first we're like, well, will that hurt registration? And we decided, no, we want profiles in the system to create engagement. When we talk about how do you raise engagement, knowing who else is there is number one. I want to know who else is there. So if I'm going to meet with someone, I want to know who they are. So we ask them, what company type are you? What are you looking for at this event? You know, with a drop down. what are you providing at this event? So if I'm selling something, I can say what I'm selling. Where are you geographically? Where's your market from geographically? Where are your tours in geographically? Because sometimes, you know, I might be based here in Boulder, Colorado, but I'm selling Thailand vacations, right? So you get all that information, put your photo in so that when I enter the swap card platform, everybody has a real profile. And now I can filter my attendee list. I only want to talk to people who are from the US, who are tour operators who are looking for X. And it will filter my 2,000 people and show me 20, 30, 50 people that I want to meet with. And I can click on everyone, see what they're all about, schedule meetings. So I think that's enough of that, right? Like that's number one in creating engagement is knowing who else is at this event. And it's so rarely done. So many virtual events I'm at, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, I can see the difference there because I intended to actually meet some people and they were interested, comment me, like you said, in chat. And then I couldn't find anything short of going to LinkedIn, look them up.
Yeah.
But let's go back to the type of events that you were working and producing in 2020 and dial in a little bit the marketing. What were the steps that you took to make sure that you build a little bit of a buzz around your event to make sure that people show up?
Sure. I mean, we have a brand that is global, that is well-known. So we start with that. And the marketing is not that much different than the marketing for a live event, except for really making sure we're selling the benefit of a virtual event. And each time it was easier because we learned from the first time and also our audience. You know, the first time you're in June, you come to a virtual event, might have been the first for a lot of those people, and they're skeptical. So that's why we did free beta events first so that we could learn, but also our audience could learn that there is value in virtual events. The marketing itself, again, wasn't much different than our live events. We rely on a few different things. So, of course, our database. We have a very large database and we make sure they all know about it. We're really into social. And we understand that the best use of social is not just arrival pushing out social messaging, but getting our speakers, sponsors. We created this group called Arrival Experts and to get them involved. And I'll talk about Arrival Experts in a minute. So we would create assets for them. So our speakers had the assets that we gave them. Talk about you are participating. Our sponsors had assets that we gave them, these Arrival Experts. So we gave them assets to make it easy for them to share on their social channels. And before you knew it, if you're interested in this industry, you kept seeing messaging about Arrival 360, which was the name of our first major virtual event.
It basically includes like a whole package with graphics, with hashtag. If all you wanted to do is copy and paste something, you would just copy and paste something. And there's very little effort on your side if you didn't want to put some effort to actually create a post about it. Because I've seen that was quite successful of a marketing tactic for a lot of events that wanted to create traction by using their mailing list and the speakers and the sponsors and anyone that was part of the event. Use what you have. You already have all these assets. Make use of that.
Yeah. Well, as I've said, we're a community. So when someone's a speaker or a sponsor or an Arrival Expert, they're a major part of our community. And they're also a thought leader and an influencer in our community. So we wanted to utilize them. So we would literally send them an asset that they would create a post, a Facebook post on LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever. And they just needed to attach the asset we gave them to their post. And there you go. So that worked quite well.
That's fantastic. And I guess as far as landing page and websites for the events and registration, do you have any thoughts on those that you want to add or maybe mobile apps that integrated with your event?
Well, I mean, again, it's not that much different than a live event. Of course, we have landing pages that feature certain things. We have landing pages for our content, for our speakers. It's really not any different than the live event, just making sure we're selling the benefit of a virtual event. So yes, it's different. Content focuses on come to this virtual event. You get this kind of content. You still get all the networking that you really look for at Arrival. A big piece of Arrival is peer-to-peer learning. It's what we call the magic of Arrival is people in our industry love to learn from each other. People in every industry love to learn from each other, right? I mean, they don't just want a talking head sending out content. And that's another huge part of our engagement is setting up what we call roundtables or buzz sessions, which are, you know, glorified Zoom rooms with anywhere from 10, 15 people, always with a host. One of our Arrival Experts is the host on a certain topic. So, you know, what a lot of people call birds of a feather sessions. I'm huge on those, totally huge on those. If you want to talk about engagement, there is nothing more engaging that our attendees have found than sitting in a room, you know, a virtual room of 10, 15 people, hosted by someone who is not there to talk content or pitch or anything like that. They're there to facilitate, make sure everyone participates, et cetera, et cetera. Those sessions are unbelievably engaging. That's what we hear from our attendees. Love to hear what your feelings are on that and your audience, but it's something we make sure happens at every one of our events.
I think another thing that could be said about that is not underestimating the importance of having somebody that hosts those events and glues things together so that throughout the event, people feel like they are engaging with actually a real person. And then, you know, even if they come and go, it's still okay for that to happen because you can't be in control of people's times, obviously. But I've seen a lot of success when, you know, aside from all the other technology that's used with like live polling and chatting and whatever, there's Anthimeter's ways to engage with your presentations and do it well and smart. Do you have any other, I guess, tips you want to add just based on the experience that you have had with your virtual event?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to clarify one thing you just said, Anca. So we have an MC for the overall event, the glue that brings the whole event together, which people are talking about needing for a virtual.
Yes.
So yes, we have that. What you were just talking about is what we call a host or facilitator inside one of these roundtables.
I was actually mostly talking about the overall MC to facilitate, but then you just added the additional MC.
Yeah, so now we have the additional, not really an MC, but a host. So you get into a room of 10 or 15 people. If there's no leader in that room, you're like the people kind of sit around, all right, what are we talking about? Where our roundtables have a topic, birds of a feather, and we have these arrival experts. So these are 50 handpicked people that I've been working with now since March. You know, they're experts in their field. I work with them to create what should the topic of your roundtable be? And then you host and facilitate it. They actually reach out to everyone who's pre-registered ahead of time. What questions do you have? Mm-hmm. And their job is to make sure everyone participates, everyone's comfortable, welcoming people in as they arrive, you know, really just making that roundtable a huge beneficial session for everybody. And really, if I'm going to say, what do I think is really important for engagement after this whole registration thing to create profiles, having roundtables is part of your content. So it's not just push, you know, keynotes and interviews and breakout sessions, but have the P2P engagement as well. I think those are a couple of the major things.
Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifun Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifun Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifun Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifunevents.com. Honestly, I would join a conference if I knew that I had opportunity to actually meet with specific people that I'm interested in that are in my industry so we can learn from each other. Hey, what are you doing? What have you learned during the season? And anything similar to that, than just going and consuming content that's being fed to me without the opportunity to co-create some of that.
Because a lot of people talk about networking at a virtual event, and what they really mean is their platform or their event provides one-on-one networking, like you and I can easily get on and network, or it might be a different kind of small networking, but I'm really talking about combination of content and network. So we're both interested in ski vacations. You want to snowboard, I want to ski. And this topic is called, you know, ski vacations for 2021 in the age of COVID. And we have someone who is facilitating that. And the only people in that room care about skiing or snowboarding. And yeah, I can learn as much from you and how you snowboard in Idaho as you can learn
from me. What kind of gear you use and what kind of gear I use and like what would be something better to actually like not be freezing.
Right. You're in Idaho. You've never been to Sun Valley. And you're like, oh yeah, blah, 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 right? So this peer-to-peer learning is a huge part of our live events and a huge part of our virtual events and creates that engagement that we're looking for.
Yeah, that's something that I always look forward to when, you know, if I'm going to put some time into joining a conference, I'm going to join something of that nature. Where do you see one-on-one meetings play within this engagement setup?
One-on-one meetings are huge, but you want to know who you're meeting with ahead of time. And maybe it's someone you met at one of these roundtables. Maybe it's someone you met because you liked a comment or a question they asked during. Or maybe it's someone you met because you filtered the attendee list and they are someone that you should meet with. So in Swapcard, you're basically one click away from creating a contact. And then once you're connected, you're one click away from either scheduling a call, video call, of course, like this, which every platform has. So you can pre-schedule it on their schedule or what we call an ad hoc call. Like, hey, Anka, you available at noon? Let's just schedule a call for that. And then we just hop on a one-click call at that point. And of course, those are critical. I mean, I think our last event, and we get great analytics. That's something that you also get from virtual events that you can't get as much from live events. I believe we had well over 15,000 calls that were connected during Arrival 360. So that's data that we have and that we know that that's how much activity was going on over the course of these 2 weeks. And another cool point, this event was over 2 weeks, but Swapcard was open for the whole time. And actually, it's still open. That's one nice thing about Swapcard is you get access to it for a long time.
So this is post-event still open for engagement?
Yeah, it's open. There's not a lot of engagement happening, but it could. It could if people wanted it. But during that 2 weeks, even though let's just say Friday, we didn't have anything going on, I could go ahead and click into Anka and say, oh, you look interesting. And I could send you a message. If you're on the platform, you'll get a notification. If you're not on the platform, you get an email. And there's still a way to connect through the platform that way.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So let's go over a few of the takeaways from what we just talked about as far as the engagement. You started with like, you know, charge for registration, you know, give people some skin in the game. What other takeaways should we highlight?
Okay. Well, I mean, we hit charge for registration, require profile building during registration, make sure that you have peer-to-peer learning built into your agenda, have active chat going on. So those are the highlights of what we've talked about. I'll add one more. We happen to be in a really cool industry, right? Our industry is all about experiences. So one day during our break, so we have like an hour break or an hour and a half or sometimes 2 hour breaks that are meant for networking, open networking break, or, you know, go get lunch or go check your email, whatever, but it's a break. During that break, we would also stream in an experience. The coolest one we did was live from Venice. It was a gondola tour. There's a restaurant here called the Gondolier, a live gondola tour. And it was as simple as a host in Venice live with a cell phone, you know, just kind of touring around Venice. It was crazy because there's no people there. But she was also, you know, talking about the experience and what she was seeing. And we had a couple hundred people who were just watching that and they were able to chat and talk about how cool it was. That was really relevant for our audience.
Did they even have the gondola driver sing? I remember when I was in Venice and we took a tour, it was the best thing ever. Yeah. We were getting serenaded.
He didn't serenade. I'm not sure why. That would have been great.
That would have been amazing. Although we weren't sure if he was drunk or not, because at any point he could have fallen in the water and we're like, oh, he's going to fall.
Yeah. Not sure if he sang on that one. But then the next day we did a Paris tour. And actually that one was pre-recorded by the company that offered it. But we pre-screened it. And we said, this is perfect for our audience. Sometimes between sessions, we found a DJ that was fantastic. And we got the DJ to just, so the stream was the DJ, even though people were off doing other things. But if they came back to the main page of our site, they would see DJ. And, you know, people were like, I was out dancing to the music. So creating what I'll call interstitials, video and experiences and different things that are relevant to your industry was another way that we kept engagement. And people loved it. And it's just fun. And I've seen lots of really cool ideas. There's so many ideas out there of what you can do. You know, it just has to be relevant for your industry. Although I would argue that, you know, an experience, you know, being in Italy or in Paris or in, you know, Latin America or wherever is relevant because people will enjoy seeing something.
Absolutely.
And there's so many out there. There's so many recorded experiences now while we're in lockdown. And when we get out of lockdown, there's so many companies that are now starting to provide virtual experiences that is a really cool way to just keep people engaged, even when there's no content.
Absolutely. I remember when we first started getting into the lockdown last March and April with the kids home, we were doing all those Disney wild rides on YouTube, you know, just watching people that posted videos of them going down the rides. It was the best thing ever for the kids. although it was kind of sad that we couldn't go. Yeah. I would still want to go in person, obviously. We canceled, like everybody else, we canceled our vacations, and Mexico and Canada will have to wait for another time. I don't think I want to see any of those places virtually. I want to see them in person, you know, but in the interim, maybe I would be okay with just someone posting something about it and joining right. and enjoying that way.
Because we don't want to be doing virtual events either, but we are, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so I guess giving people different experiences is part of that ingredient list that you need in order to have good engagement during your event. And the other thing you mentioned was having those roundtables, breakouts, and one-on-one meetings, and making sure that there's a real person behind that profile with real information and relevant information so that you can connect outside of just the events, build relationships. Now, what do you do when it comes to post-event engagement? You know, a lot of the engagement is great during an event, and then it just kind of sort of dies off once the event is over. I think I'm still part of some chat rooms where there's a little bit of try to keep that engagement going, but it's hard post-event. Do you have any tips to ensure that?
Yeah, it's really hard. We'll tell you what we're doing. We actually just launched something today, but I just want to go back real quick in terms of engagement, because we missed this, which is content is king. Yes, engagement is queen, but content is still king. So we focus a lot on having great content, great speakers. If you don't have great content, and if the people delivering it aren't great speakers, engagement goes down. So I don't want to pass that off of something that we didn't even mention.
It's true. Yeah. I was like, that could be an entire discussion in itself. Separately. Yeah.
Right. So we make sure we have great speakers. We make sure the content is super relevant for our audience. One thing, we are a leader in what our audience cares about. And we're always talking to people, asking them. So we make sure it's super relevant. We deliver our own research that no one else has access to, that people want to hear the trends and what's going to happen next kind of thing. And we're learning more and more and more of how short our sessions need to be, keeping them short, keeping them punchy, varying the kinds of sessions. So content remains king. And I just didn't want to miss that.
Okay. No, absolutely. You're right. Thank you for bringing that up, because sometimes you just focus so much on one thing, which is the engagement. Everybody talks about how engagement has been one of the hardest challenges for virtual events. But like you said, not having content be first and foremost things that happen at that event, you could have the best engagement, but then you're left off with possibly just the chat.
Yeah. Well, people think it was a waste of their time. They didn't learn anything. And back to the marketing side, that's, you market from content usually. That's, you know, the speakers and people say, oh, I can see this person, that person. And that helps obviously with the marketing to get people onto the event. And then you really focus on getting them to engage while they're at the event. In terms of post-event, it's really hard. And what we have just launched today is a membership program. And it's a lot of buzz around the industry to try to, you know, not just make your events a standalone event, but get your community to continue to stay engaged with you. So what we did was we're creating a series of events in 2021, virtual events. We'll have between 8 and 10 different events. We're hoping to be hybrid in October in Orlando. I'd say the chances are good right now. We'll see. I'm not guaranteeing anything. So we created a membership program where for one fee, you get access to all of our virtual events in 2021. You get access to all of our research in 2021. You get a discount on our live event in Orlando, if it goes, which it will, knock, knock. And some other benefits, like we've created a whole host of benefits and we'll continue to tweak. But by doing that, we're keeping engagement going. And then the next step of that is to create that community with the profiles. And so that people can just communicate with themselves outside of the Swapcard platform. The Swapcard platform has great profiles, but it's an event platform. We need a community platform.
Yeah.
First, we needed to create this membership program, which is now live. Next, we really look at the community platform, which is really hard to find the right one that does the right thing. We're very focused on keeping people really centralized in our community with our databases. We have some huge databases. And if we use a third-party community platform, which most people do, we lose a lot of control. So that's what we're doing first, is we're saying, you know what? It's going to be really hard to get you to communicate with someone post-event, but next month there's another event. And next month there's another event. And next month there's another event. And for one low cost, I mean, we're talking as low as $119 to be a member. You get access to all of our stuff.
And then if you met someone, say, at the first event, then you have the opportunity to hopefully see them again. And that's where you start building a little bit of rapport with other people as opposed to just a one-off. Not a lot of traction happens in just a one-off. It took us a few meetings to realize, actually, we have a lot of things in, let's start working together, you know, and a lot of good things come once you start communicating and sharing, you know, each other's perspective on things. I have a question for you now that has to do with on-demand content, because a lot of event organizers, especially in the virtual, you know, hybrid format, they have mixed feelings when it comes to offering on-demand content post-event because of this same going back to skin in the game, where if you give people the opportunity to just see the on-demand and miss on the live, then you give them a way out to not necessarily engage, you know, the day of. So what's your take? Should you or should you not offer on-demand?
Yeah, great question. Hands down, yes, offer on demand, because I don't know your schedule. And just because I say the event is, you know, going to be 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday, you may or may not be able to make that. Maybe you can make some of the time, but other time you can't. So if you register for this event and you're interested in the content, you should have access to that content anytime. And I firmly believe that. Now, it's up to us to make it worth your while to be there live. So how do we do that with this different stuff we've been talking about, engagement? Roundtable, you can't catch that on demand. You know, if you want to be in a room with 10, 15 other people, that's live. There is no option there. Networking, live. Being able to chat and be really involved in the chat, live. You know, there's other ways that you need to create engagement for live, but people are going to want to see content on demand. Sometimes we have two things going on at once, you know, two or three concurrent sessions. So of course, if you don't put it out on demand, people will have to choose one session, not get to see the other sessions. So I think on demand is really, really important. I know from talking to our attendees, they really appreciate that mm-hmm. they could go back and look at sessions, even sessions that you were watching. You might want to go back and watch. Yeah. What's really cool about Swapcard is the chat is actually part of the on demand. A lot of systems don't provide.
Yeah.
And I think the chat provides a real lot of context. Q&A and chat provides a lot of context. So you even get that when you go on demand. So when you buy a ticket to one of our events, or if you subscribe, you know, our membership, you get access to all of that on demand.
Fantastic. So I guess one last question before we wrap it up. What are some KPIs to keep track of for virtual events that would benefit in the long run? You know, something that you've said you started doing with the beta event, creating and producing and hosting better events going forward.
Sure. You know, I've been watching a lot of the research that's been coming out from different places, and a lot of meeting planners are still saying, these aren't effective. They're not finding effectiveness. They're not finding the engagement, and they're not making any money. We didn't make a lot of money either. I mean, I think you said six figures or more. I mean, six figures, definitely not more. Just so we're clear. And that's nothing compared to what we would make on a live event. It's not like I would say, let's just scrap our live events and this is all super
profitable.
But you still need to make money, you need to cover overhead and make money. One thing we haven't even talked about on this podcast yet, Anka, are sponsors. And just like our live events, we get about half our revenue from registration, half our revenue from sponsors. So when we think KPIs, we really think about sponsorship as well. When we put the event together, everything we do, we have an eye on sponsorship as well as the attendees. And we make sure that we keep everybody happy. So KPIs. Number one, obviously, is how many registrations did we get? I mean, that's the simplest KPI tied with revenue. How much registration revenue did we get? We have budgets and goals for every event, and then we measure. What's really hard about virtual is almost all the registrations happen in the last 2 weeks. You know, we track KPIs like for a live event, we're tracking KPIs on a month by month basis leading up to an event, you know, 6 months prior.
And you have a benchmark, which in the past, you know, was something that you were looking back to and like, okay, this is the benchmark. Now with virtual events, was something that you build up from scratch. There is no benchmark.
There is no benchmark, except for now we know the last 2 weeks, you could get as much as 70%+ of your registrations. Thankfully, we don't have to worry about F&B menus to deal with that.
Oh, yeah. And hotel blocks.
All that stuff. So, you know, and now as we're doing more, we'll get more comfortable with that fact. But that's a little stressful, but it's still something we want to track is registration revenue, and make sure that we're measuring that super closely. Then as the event happens, so once we know that, let's just say 1,000 people registered, how many people actually logged in? That's a major KPI for us. And we know that out of our 2,000 or so, about 80% logged into Swapcard.
Which is a great return, because again, it goes back to probably that skin in the game, because really the average for most events is between 40 and 50.
Because it's free, right? So That is a huge KPI. What percent of your registrations actually entered your event platform? So we look at that super closely. Then how many sessions did people attend? And even more importantly is how long did they stay on the session? So if the session is 20 minutes, did they stay for 20 minutes? Did they stay for 10 minutes? You know, we look at that as a KPI, like what's the length of session? Because we're still trying to figure out the ideal length of session. Yeah. So we look at that as a KPI of how long were people on it? Obviously, the longer, the better.
It goes back to the content at this point, where if your content is not desirable and not focused enough, most likely they're going to log out in 5-10 minutes.
Exactly. So, you know, we also can look at, you know, when someone logged in, when someone logged out at the end of the day, although that's a tough one because a lot of times someone opens their browser and they keep it open. So you don't really know, right? But we do know when they're in a session. That's where we can figure that out. So we have those KPIs as some of the basic KPIs. Then we look at, from a sponsor perspective, how many contacts did that sponsor make? Because that's what they want. They want to meet people. How many meetings did they have? How many people visited their virtual exhibit? We have virtual exhibits. We can give them all of that data. Plus we can tell them who those people are. So I can say to any sponsor, these are the 100, 200 people that your team connected with. Here's the people who visited your exhibit. Here's the meetings you had. It's all downloadable into their CRM. So those are KPIs that we help our sponsors put together. And we work really closely with our sponsors pre-meeting, pre-event, to make sure that they know how to take the most advantage of the event. Because I think that's another thing that might happen. I don't know, but I'm going to guess that is a lot of event producers or meeting planners don't really train their sponsors how to leverage the event. You know, I did a webinar for all of our sponsors. I put together a manual and I did a webinar. I'm a business guy. I said, if I'm coming to my event, here's how I'm going to get the best ROI. And I think that's super important.
Yeah, it's something that we actually implemented with a lot of the virtual fundraising events that I've been working on in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, the more info you can give them ahead of time, again, this is back to engagement. I'm feeling more engaged. I know what I'm going to get. I'm not just clicking into something and being confused. That all makes
sense. Absolutely. Yeah. It definitely goes back, going back to the registration that we didn't even mention. This discussion could just go on and on, I feel like, for a while, mapping out the touch point that attendee takes just part of the registration process and how easy do you make it for them so that they don't get confused. Like 3 pages later, they're like, I don't even know what I signed up for at this point.
Right. Right.
Because I've been taken off to some other website. I just want it to be in my calendar and I want to have the information that I need. So that when I come back to it, it's there. I just press a link and I have stories about frustrations.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I registered for this event. How do I get into it? Yeah.
Seriously. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. This was a lot of information, a lot of fantastic tips on how to engage your digital attendees for your events and what is the most important things to keep in mind. And I believe that everybody could take a few of those tips and apply to their event, may that be virtual or hybrid. And now that we are coming to a close here, where can our audience find you online?
Very simply, email would be fine if people have questions. Bruce@arrival.travel. Arrival only has one R. Don't let anyone tell you anything differently. Arrival is one R. On LinkedIn, you can just look up Bruce Rosard, R-O-S-A-R-D. Those would probably be the best two channels.
Fantastic. Well, I am ready to take some of those tips and apply them myself. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate your time and all the great information that you share with us. I look forward to events that for to partner, and I appreciate your time and I thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Anka. I've told you, I think your podcast is the best out there for event professionals that are really trying to break into and build their expertise in virtual and hybrid events. And I know you're going to keep going that way. So it was really a pleasure to be on here with you. And just remember that content is king, but engagement is queen.
That's right. Thank you so much, Bruce. Alrighty. Well, friends, I'm hoping that you will go back and listen to some of the tips that Bruce had to share as far as engagement and content goes and the KPI you should be looking for your next event. For right now, this is it for our episode. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to check out the links in the episode's notes and do subscribe to stay tuned for our next episodes coming up. We've got a great lineup and I am super excited about sharing that with you. I welcome your feedback. Keep that coming either via direct messaging on Instagram, Facebook, or even email podcast@trifunevents.com. Have a fantastic rest of your day. Until next time.